Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's time to get green. Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser are here. All natural, no pesticides, no artificial ingredients. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
All right, let's get going, folks. The Organic Gardeners, 866-391-1020. Dollar Bank, instant access, kdkradio.com. You could text us on the right automotive line, the best deal in town, the same way you can phone us at 866-391-1020. 10th caller wins a $25 gift certificate from Sorgles, 412-922-1020. Here they are, the dynamic duo of the gardening world, Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser.
Good morning. I am Doug Oster from Everybody Gardens and the Tribune Review.
And I'm horticulturist Jessica Walliser.
New intro music. Did you hear that? I felt like I was supposed to be on the news or something.
Do we have to be serious now? Is that
no,
the thing? And get the serious music. And we both looked at each other like, wait, is this right? After all these years to have new rejoinder music, like that's kind of fun. Remember that one song we used to have way back in the
Organic Love?
Organic Love song. Yeah. We should try to get a renaissance
we
of that.
Should.
That was a pretty fun song if our listeners have been listening for these many years. 13 and a half years.
Actually,
it's a lot of gardening.
Speaking of music, I was planting my garlic bulbs and 32 hyacinth bulbs yesterday, and I was so excited that I actually wrote a musical about it, which is going to be premiered on Everybody Gardens on Wednesday.
Okay. A musical about music garlic.
No, well, it is music garlic, but a musical about still planting in January because I was overjoyed to be on my knees.
Did you wear your tux and tails and tap dance in this
musical? I can't give anything away.
Okay.
I can't give anything away. Let's just say that if anybody involved in the Hamilton show sees it, it'll change their opinion completely of musical theater. They'll be shocked.
They'll be shocked and awe. Shock and awe is what you were going for. Is that it? Well, that's exciting, though, that you were out planting bulbs. I mean, it was such a beautiful day. I took down the Christmas lights, but such a
good
day. I
know a lot of people did.
For planting yesterday.
Yeah, but oh, man, it was just so good. And then, you know, they've been selling these hellebores, the one we talk about all the time that blooms in the winter. And they're selling them as indoor Christmas plants.
But they're outdoor perennials.
Yeah, but they're perennials.
Right.
And last year I put one in, and at this time last year it was 3 degrees. So it couldn't catch on. Well, now I've had two of them in for about 3 weeks now, 2 weeks. And hopefully they're going to catch on. And now I'll have my perennials because, you know, once the holiday is over, they're just trying to give the plants away.
And this is a plant that, unlike a lot of other plants that are in bloom at the holidays, it's not tropical. It's fully hardy. And it naturally blooms at that time. So it doesn't, an azalea that you buy at the holidays or hydrangea is forced to bloom at that time. And it requires a lot of energy. But with the hellebores, that's their natural bloom time.
I just wonder if that hellebore can survive indoors. Maybe it can.
I think just as a temporary plant.
Until the spring?
I don't know.
I don't know.
That'd be interesting. But I would imagine that it could. But then what I would worry is after you move it outdoors in the spring, will it be able to get back onto its natural cycle in a way that will enable it to bloom next year at its normal bloom time?
It'd probably take a while.
Yeah. I don't know. It would be interesting. But
I hope these two make it. And then the one, the hellebore that's already been in place, it's blooming late. It's just starting now.
Mm.
And the buds are just this beautiful, deep pink. Mm. And they'll open to kind of a white, yellowish flower that's almost plastic. That's what I mean. It feels that way. And the bees love it. You know, when you get a day like yesterday and the bees fly, that's where they come to. They come to those flowers.
Because there's not much else of the selection.
What else are they going to do?
Right. So not much.
If you happen to have some bulbs left over, you didn't get them in the ground.
Do it.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, those hyacinths. I just couldn't believe I found some hyacinths.
You get itchy from hyacinths?
Mm-mm.
Okay. I can't touch hyacinth bulb because they're treated with a fungicide. They're dusted with a fungicide because a lot of times they rot. in storage before you plant them. And so they're almost always dusted with this. And for some reason, I have to wear gloves when I handle them because I get a terrible itchy rash from. So that's a caution if you're a planting hyacinth to be very
I actually wondered about you with the garlic because I had extra garlic, but then I ended up planting it. So it was.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't give away extra garlic.
No, I would have. I actually had one head left, you know, and I was like, well, I wonder, and I said, if I sent her a message of her, I say, no, I'm done planting.
Yeah, so, I would have said exactly that. But, you know, the thing is, with beautiful weather like yesterday, decent weather today, there, if your green thumb is itching and you want to get out there and do something and you don't have bulbs to plant, there are other things that you can be doing. I mean, it is technically the dormant season, obviously, and so a lot of deciduous trees should be pruned at this time of year, including if you have fruit trees. Blueberry bushes can be pruned anytime now through, you know, the middle of March is ideal time to go out and do it. And it is great when we have a nice warm day.
I have a pruning question for you.
Okay.
So since these big oaks came down, I put in my sourwood and I put in my American hornbeam to kind of replace them. I've noticed there's three kind of wild flowering crab apples there.
Okay.
Which I really never really noticed, but they're just... they're completely overgrown with suckers that can never bloom or put on fruit correctly. They put on a few. And I know the rule of thumb is only take off maybe, you know, one third max, but these suckers all have to come off.
Yeah, take all the suckers off. They don't count. They don't fit in that one third rule if it's one of the suckers are water sprouts. So
yeah,
like the sucker comes out at the base of the plant. A water sprout is a straight shot growth that comes out up in the canopy of that tree. Yeah, you can go ahead and get those out. A lot of times they're the result of like an old pruning injury or improper pruning, or they're coming up from below the graft point if it was a grafted one.
I don't think these were ever pruned. I think these have just been sitting in there wild. And again, I kind of noticed them, but I'm not, you know.
Yeah.
Now that those bigger trees are gone, I'm like, wow, these are flowering crabs. These could be something, these could be kind of nice in the spring. So, all right, I'm going to trim them up then.
Yeah, and this, again, is a good time of year to do that. You know, the ones you don't want to be pruning so much are maples right now. Not really the best time for those.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
All right, 866-391-1020, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com. Text us on the right on the move line, best deal in time. Before we get to these callers, any other items that we need to discuss?
Well, one little thing we want to talk about is dormant oil, or as I call it, dormant oil.
Dormant oil is a horticultural grade refined. It's a petroleum-based product, or it can be a vegetable. And as an organic gardener, we choose ones that are based on vegetable oil. But you don't use vegetable oil from your kitchen. You use this ultra-refined oil, and you can buy it at your local garden center. It's labeled as dormant oil, and it's sprayed on primarily fruit trees or deciduous trees, only on deciduous trees that have lost their leaves for the winter. And what it does is it serves to smother any overwintering pest or pest eggs that are on that plant. So orchards will use it during the dormant season, vineyards. And certainly if you had a deciduous tree that had a pest issue last year, you might want to consider either doing it yourself or having someone like Davy Tree, an arborist, come out and do a dormant oil application, because it really will help control pests for next year. And it's sort of a critical step in fruit care.
And not on a windy day.
Nice
calm day.
Nice calm day. And a warmish day. You don't want to do it on a super cold day, which I don't know why anybody would be out there spraying dormant oil in freezing temperatures anyway. But this type of weather, again, through, you know, early to mid-March, when they start to come out of dormancy, is the time when you need
especially
to do it.
Especially for fruit trees, right?
Yes. Very, very important for fruit tree care.
Do we have a call there, Rob? No.
Not yet.
Well, let's just...
And not even any instant accesses?
Not yet.
Boy, everybody
How about
needs
a text?
To wake up.
Not yet.
Smoke signal?
Not yet.
Carrier pigeon?
Not yet.
Okay.
The other task that I'm doing right now, and I just wrote an article about this for my website, Savvy Gardening, is doing a little bit of houseplant grooming. Grooming is, you know, it's a way to exercise your green thumb this time of year. It's a way to get your houseplants into good shape when they are not in a period of active growth. So this is a super time to do that. So it's going through that plant, picking off any brown leaves, taking it to the sink, really washing the outside of the pot, wiping off the leaves. If you get a big, thick covering of dust on the leaves of your houseplant, it really can limit photosynthesis. It can make those plants weaker. It can stunt their growth during the, you know, growing season when they're actively growing. So just take a damp cloth and wipe the dust off of those leaves. All really important for houseplant health. The other thing is, a lot of times you'll get little brown, crispy tips on the end of your houseplant. So that's where fertilizer salts collect, and it causes them to turn brown and crispy. It means that you're either over-fertilizing your plant or you're not flushing the water through the soil when you irrigate your houseplants. But you can take a very sharp pair of clean shears and trim off that dead brown tip. Just cut it. Don't cut it off blunt. Cut it off so it looks like a nice taper, so you know it doesn't make the leaf have an unnatural shape. But you can get rid of that. It's never going to go away, even if you, you know, cut back on your fertilization or start to water properly. The only way to get rid of it is to trim it off. But it's part, should be part of your regular grooming process on your houseplants.
And a reminder, no fertilizer for your houseplants right now.
Exactly. And that's what this article was about. It was about timing of the fertilization schedule, what kind of products they you can use. I actually found a really interesting organic houseplant fertilizer that's it's powdered and you mix it with water. So it's a water-soluble fertilizer, but it's an organic one. Most of the organic fertilizers are liquid already, mm-hmm. and you mix it mm-hmm. with water. This one is like a powdery form. And it is, it's a Jobe's Organics water-soluble fertilizer, and man, is it nice. Mm. And it has, in addition to having a good nutrient level all derived from natural sources, it also has all these beneficial microbes and bacteria in it that provide, will continue to provide nutrients to your plants over time as they break down organic matter in the soil and things. It's for indoor and outdoor plants. And I really like it as an alternative to that blue chemical fertilizer that we, you know, usually don't recommend.
I'll have to look for that because I have the big things of liquid that you mix up as a concentrate.
Yeah, which is great. But it was kind of cool to see a granular water-soluble substitute in that in the mm-hmm. organic family. And I got it at Sorgel's. Just a little box. It wasn't very expensive. And I'm looking forward to giving it a try in the spring.
All right, let's go to the phones. Here's Cindy in Irwin for Doug and Jess, KDK Radio. Hey, Cindy.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Good, how are you? What's going on?
Good. I was just wondering, is it a good time to, I have large holly bushes that are out of shape that need some pruning and a white birch. Is it a good time to prune those too?
It is not a good time to prune a birch because like maples, birch have sap that runs in the winter.
Okay.
And so it's not a good time to do birch or maples. I would wait to do the birch, actually, surprisingly, until it's in leaf is a good time to do birch trees, pruning on birch trees. But it's fine, a fine time to do the hollies. In fact, all of the broad-leaved evergreens that aren't really prized for their flowers, so things like hollies, boxwoods, you know, arborvitas, things like that, you can prune this time of year. The only evergreens I wouldn't do are ones that bloom in spring, like rhododendrons and azaleas and laurels. Those I would hold off until after they bloom.
You actually do your hollies for the holidays, right? Fresh greens,
yep,
right?
I usually do my hollies in early, and boxwoods in early December so that I can use them for the holidays. But if you didn't, now's a fine time to do it.
Can I ask you real fast, too? I had some, I guess, wind damage last year I had on a place with my hollies and it lost some of like the middle bottoms. Like what's the best way to get that back? Is that holly tone? Like, and when should I do it? Like how do I get some of that growth back at the bottom?
Well, do you mean like the leaves have dropped off or there's brown leaves hanging on the plant still?
No, they had dropped off more like bare spots. Before it was like a solid wall like a hedge and
okay.
Now it's kind of sparse.
Yeah, so I would prune out any branches that have no more growth on it that are dead. If you have any dead branches in there, prune those out because that's going to stimulate new growth. And then you definitely want to do some holly tone, but wait until spring, right? Now is not
spring.
The time. I would do that probably early April. Do your fertilization program. And holly tone is definitely the best product to use for hollies.
Oh, I love that stuff.
Me too.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, let's go to Dave. Dave, you're up next for Doug and Jess, KDK Radio. Dave,
you there?
Hello.
Hey, Dave, what's going on?
Oh, this is Steve. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Last year, I did some extensive work in my backyard, and I planted all grass seed. well, I guess because of all the rain, the grass didn't grow, but I got, it's all moss. My question is, come springtime, will I be able to just peel that up a little bit and plant new grass, or do I have to completely remove all the moss?
Well, that moss tells us something about what's going on with your lawn. The first step is going to be get some kind of soil test to see where your pH is and fertility. You know, grass will grow like crazy when it's happy. And to be happy, it needs the right fertility and the right pH. Whenever we see moss or creeping Charlie or all sorts of other problems, we know there's some kind of problem there. And you can get that from the Penn State Cooperative Extension. The soil test, it's like $9. Mm-hmm. And that'll get you in the right direction to start off with your grass, especially the pH.
Yeah. Yeah, moss is also often indicative of really highly compacted soil.
I love my moss, by the way.
I know you do. And I do, too. I have it in some shady spots in my garden, and I don't mind it there at all, even if it's mixed in with the lawn. But I can see if it's the only thing there that if you would rather have lawn. The nice thing about moss is you don't have to mow it, which is really great. But you might
also... And it's pretty, and it's soft, and you can lay your head on it.
And it's green. Yeah, but... You also are going to want to look into maybe getting that lawn, that section of lawn, at least aerated. That usually is best in the fall. After that lawn, the new lawn is established, you might want to consider aerating it because it could also be a compaction issue. But definitely look at that pH because I can almost guarantee you that that soil in that area is too acidic for good grass growth because that's what the moss is really like.
And if you do need to make a change for the pH, that MagiCal from Jonathan Green is really good stuff. It's available so much quicker than lime. And 5 bags of lime basically equals 1 bag of the MagiCal. So if you needed a lot of lime, it'd be better to use MagiCal from Jonathan Green. You can find that just about anywhere.
But get a soil test first to tell much you have to add.
Yeah, I always tell the story of my dad every year. The boys were going to go out and lime the yard. He had no idea if it was twice as much lime or half as much lime without that test. Without that scientific number to tell you how much to put on there, it's useless to add lime or MagiCal.
Gotcha.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Dave, Steve.
Oh, Steve. Sorry.
Steve, Dave. We got it. We got his problem solved, and that's what matters. Right? Right. And this is, it's interesting because this is not a time of year when people are normally thinking about lawn care. But it's actually a great time to think about lawn care, and it's a great time to think about soil because this is an excellent time to get a soil test.
Oh,
our ground is not frozen, which normally it is by this time of year, but it's not.
The guys at the lab are sitting around doing nothing.
Exactly.
They'll get it right back to you.
Exactly. You will not have to wait 3-4 weeks to get those soil test results back. And the fact that it's cold out doesn't influence nutrient, you know, whether or not those nutrients are going to show up in, you know, in that soil test. So this is a good time of year to go out and get that $9 test and invest in it. And you need a different one for each different part of the garden because the needs of your vegetable garden are different than the needs of your lawn. So I usually do it on like a rotating basis. I have 4 different areas that I test and I do 1 each year. And then I have 1 year where I don't test any. So they're sort of on a 5-year rotation basis.
And then when you are reseeding, use good seed, you know, Penn State mix, or we do like the Jonathan Green seed. Get good seed, you know, and be sure that it's all seed.
And new seed. Don't use grass seed that's been sitting in the shed for 3 years.
New seed, all seed. Look on there, make sure there's no fillers in there. That's a ripoff.
Yes, it is.
They're adding fillers on there. It should be just all grass seed and in the spring. Now, you said that before they used to sow in November or something when you were with
the... Yeah. Yep. When I worked at a landscaping company, some of the best lawns we put in were installed from seed that was planted very late in the fall. In some cases, it germinated in the fall and the plants were just really young and they came through the winter that way. And other times, it actually was just, you know, bare ground all winter long. And then that seed that was sown late in the fall germinated first thing in the spring, and it was lush and gorgeous.
You have a couple minutes, Rob? Good, because I want to tell you about... I started some seeds for winter sowing. I did a segment on winter sowing.
Okay.
So my normal winter sowing is I put radish seeds into just the regular garden.
Yeah.
But a couple other ones, I did it in a milk jug that
yep.
you cut and opened and put in there. I put arugula seeds in, and I put that in the cold frame.
Oh, they've sprouted
already.
Yeah. Yeah, you double cold framed it up, and the temperatures have been really warm.
The other ones I did, I just had in a big container. They're radishes, I think, from looking at the sprouts. And then I just put those giant streetlight covers that I bought from Construction Junction, the real thick glass, I put that on top of the container. Those are sprouting too.
Right. You double whammied it. Yeah. Normally for winter sowing, it's just put out as is in that jug in a shady area, and we normally have winter temperatures. Well, it's been so warm, I can see why they sprouted.
It's so exciting to have everything in the cold frame.
Try your onions that way too. That's the best way to grow onions.
You know, I actually have garlic growing in there. I found that last year. I just threw some extra garlic cloves in there, and they just sprouted sooner, were bigger quicker.
Yeah.
It was great. But I forgot to put a tag on that one that I put in the cold frame. So all I saw were little sprouts. So I had to take it out of there and nibble on it to figure out what it was. And I thought of you because it was arugula.
You know, I'm not a fan of arugula, but
I know
it would be good to have something green from the garden. Like time of year would be pretty great.
That's what most of the cold frame is. Kale,
yeah.
Arugula. I'm trying to think what else is out there. Leeks. And then that garlic that I did plant, I covered that with not only straw, but again, a clear plastic skylight. And those will come up sooner. So we'll have a longer harvest time.
It's all a big experiment out there, isn't it?
Oh, I'm having a ball. Loved it. Just the ground is so soft. You ready to talk?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I thought you were snoozing over there for a second.
No. Your eyes were closed.
Yeah, because I just was trying to empower myself out of this room. All right. 866.
Not because of us, though, right?
866. Oh, man. I've had enough. 866-391-1020. Dollar Bank Instant Access, kdkradio.com. You can text us on the Red Automotive Line, best deal in town. That, of course, the same number that you call to join us on the program.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
All right, 10th caller, 412-922-1020, wins a $25 gift certificate from Janoski's. 412-922-1020. Okay, how do you say that word again?
Actinivate.
Okay, so when I say I saw I have some
Actinivate
left in the refrigerator, I'm guessing I need a new pouch. How many times can I apply it? I think I only used it once. That a Wright Automotive text message.
Okay, so
what is it first?
Yeah, so Actinivate is a biostimulant. It's a soil stimulant that you apply to the soil. It helps suppress diseases. It depends on what you're using it for. Now, I do believe I'd have to do a little research, but I believe that it's even though you're storing it properly in the refrigerator, it does have a lifespan. So I would think that you would have to buy a new one every year, but those label instructions should tell you how long that it remains active. Because it's a living organism, you have to treat it properly, put it in storage properly, buy it from a reputable source, and then use it in an appropriate way. So I do think buying a new one, new packet each year and making sure that you use it all, while it is still fresh is a good thing. And I think also probably because it's opened, its shelf life is not going to be as good.
Actinivate,
okay. Right.
Okay. Joe from Monroeville, Wright Automotive Texas.
Say it five times fast.
Please. Listen.
Not this morning. I know. I'm just teasing.
All right. Is this a good time to trim burning bushes, and does the one-third rule apply?
No rules apply to a burning bush. Anything can be done to them at any time for any reason.
Wow.
Even cut to the ground.
Yeah, you can cut them down to the ground, actually, and they will come up. Technically, we do often say that never take off more than a third at a time. But because, we know how resilient burning bushes are, you can do more than a third on those. Should you, it will take longer for the plant to bounce back and to rebound. But yeah, now's a fine time. The only time I really don't recommend doing those is in the middle of the growing season, just because it puts a little bit of added pressure on the plant. But again, they're such a resilient
plant. That one can take a little bit of pressure.
It can take a lot of pressure. Yeah. Very resilient plant.
All right, let's take care of a couple of Dollar Bank Instant Access messages. Good morning. Question, is it too late to get garlic bulbs or flowering bulbs in the ground? We have this question every week.
Absolutely not. We were just talking about that. I planted both garlic and hyacinths yesterday. So if you can find them, or if you have them, get them in the ground. It's a good time to do it. Oh, like I said, so nice to be working in the garden. And who When was the last time you worked in a garden in January? It's been
not
been
unless
a while.
You live in South Carolina.
Yeah, it's been a long time. This is really a weird season. So yeah, get them in the ground. It'll be interesting to see, actually, the difference between the garlic planted in October and planted in January. Will there be a difference? Will it be the same? Will I not be able to tell? Because I won't remember what was what, but
I we'll bet see. The head. My guess is that the heads are not going to be as large on the ones that were planted now, because the ones that planted in October are going to have much more time to establish a good root system and start forming that nice big bulb.
Only time will tell.
It's true. Be an interesting experiment, though.
This is from Dan asking Jessica, but you could ask Doug too. What is your favorite hand pruner for general garden use? This is the part I don't understand, and I hope she's sleeping. My wife keeps losing hers. And I hope she has lost him after that comment.
Hey, listen, everybody has an opinion on a pruner. Everybody has ones that are their favorite and they love, but I will tell you the pair that I have owned for 26 years. And I have never lost them because they are my right-hand man. They're always in my back pocket when I'm out in the garden. And they are Felco's, which is a Swiss brand. It's F-E-L-C-O. They have different numbers of Felco pruners, and each number has a different feature. Some are made for larger hands. Some are made for smaller. Some have a rotating handle.
For older hands?
Some have ones that have, right, like a ratcheting system that make it easier for people with arthritis. The one I have is their basic pruner, which is Felco number 5. I have honestly had it for 26 years. The blade is replaceable. It comes apart. You can replace the blade. I've replaced the blade a couple of times over the years, and I've replaced the little coiled spring that is the action that opens and closes it. I did leave them outside overnight a couple times, and that little spring will rust. And then you'll have to replace it. The blade will sometimes rust too. You'll have to replace it.
It's quality.
Easy to sharpen. They're bypass pruners, which are my favorites. I do not like anvil pruners. Which are ones where the two cutting blades or a cutting blade meets another blade, but the bypass pruners, they cross over each other. And those are the ones that I feel I get the cleanest, sharpest cut out of.
They need to be sharpened differently than your anvil pruner, too.
Definitely.
You know, just one side. Just a nice little sharpening stone works great.
Or what's it called? They have one that works on pruners.
Do they? Do
yes.
They? Like your normal AccuSharp won't do them right.
Yeah, you can't use the same one that you use on your knives on your pruners. But they do have
special
one that
one
is
for pruner.
A single-sided for pruners. Yeah. So anyway.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, congratulations to Daniel of Coriopolis. Sounded like the announcer guy there just for a second. Coriopolis. Anyway, winner of that $25 gift certificate from Janoski's. You know, a lot of folks think that these wonderful sponsors are winding down, but there's always something going on at these folks, even if it is cold outside and the winter is upon us. So it's always good to go out and get in on all the bargains. I know Doug's there.
They wind down for a day.
Right.
And then start ramping up right now. It's time to ramp up, and seeds are coming in. The racks are getting full. That day when you walk in the nursery and the seed rack is filled, and you're always turning it around and looking for all the good stuff. I was actually I've been doing this thing. I've fallen in love with sprouting in dirt, and I've got these little
microgreens. Yeah,
I got these little microgreen growers that fit right in the windowsill. And so I was at one of the nurseries, and they had seeds half price, and I was like, I'm going to do basil this time, you know?
Oh, nice.
But the best thing for me has been the radishes. They get really big, and you can do the whole stem, and they're tasty and nutritious, and it gives me something to do, something to grow in the winter.
Try sunflowers.
Oh, yeah?
Sunflower microgreens are incredible.
Oh, cool. That's another one.
Yep.
I've got alfalfa, radishes. I've done some lettuce. I'm going to do basil. I think basil will be fun.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
Doug and Jessica teach you how to keep it green. The Organic Gardeners are on KDKA Radio.
All right, let's say hi to George in that great community of Latrobe. How you doing, George?
That's 412.
Okay, George is listening to himself on the radio, so now let's do 2, 3, 4. George, hang up, call us back. All right, now you're ready, go.
Time for Mrs. Know-It-All. She's a grower, horticulturist, and our garden goddess. Denise Schreiber, how are you doing this morning?
Good. I was out yesterday pulling bittercress.
I saw some of that too in my garden.
Yeah. But I've got something new going on that our listeners might be interested in. I am actually going to start teaching a home gardener certificate course starting January 22nd, and we're going to cover everything. We're going to do seeds, bulbs, trees, shrubs, grass, diseases, insects. If it has something to do with gardening, I'm going to be teaching it.
What about weeds?
And even weeds, and even the ones you can't eat. We'll even talk about them. Of course, the edible flowers as well.
Where are you going to be doing that?
I'm going to be doing it, actually. I've rented a space at Prince of Peace Lutheran Church in Pleasant Hills on Old Clareton Road. And, you know, there's plenty of free parking, and, you know, we've got a nice big room to do this with. I'll have handouts. We're going to do some hands-on propagation at one point. So if people want to learn how to start things from cuttings, we're going to be doing that. I'm going to show them how to sow seeds properly. And, you know, we're just, you know, we're going to even talk about Bambi, which is an ever-present threat here in Pleasant Hills, as is most of Pittsburgh or Western Pennsylvania.
Can people sign up on a per-class basis, or do they sign up for the whole program?
They sign up for the whole program. It's 6 weeks. It's once a week on Tuesday evenings. And like I said, it's going to become January 22nd. It begins. They can either do a couple of things. For more information, they can either get me at my email address, which is edibleflowers1@aol.com, or they can call during the week between 9 and 5 at 412-736-0010. And, you know, either leave a message or I'll answer the phone.
Excellent. Well, that's going to be, I'm excited to hear how that goes for you. I think you're going to have a lot of interest in that and those sort of basic horticulture things that appeal to both beginning and advanced gardeners is a really good idea. So kudos to Mrs. Know-It-All for setting
that all up. Definitely. The things that I'm doing right now is I'm spending time in the gardens. It's so nice out, just looking and planning. You know, looking at the bones and thinking what can go where, especially in my forest where I keep losing trees. You know, they've gotten old, like me, and they're falling
tell
over.
Them what your New Year's like you. Tell them what your New Year's resolution is.
Get fatter and fish more.
Very achievable.
Ladies and gentlemen,
highly achievable.
That's a great formula.
That is going to be the first New Year's revolution.
Yeah.
That is actually comes to fruition.
I think I'm going to make a T-shirt that says that.
All right. Now we're going to try George again in Latrobe. George, how you doing? Good morning.
Hey, George.
Hey, I'm doing okay. Hey, yeah, I got a rose bush, and the last year I cut the blossom off. I got one started, and it froze out on me. So this year I got one started, and I got it out, and I'm having the cellar. I'm wondering, if you think it'll grow up this year, or take it out again and keep for another year?
Well, I think it depends on what type of rose it is and how hardy it is in our area. And I believe he said he started a couple cuttings and he has them in the basement. I think that's what he said. So you're going to, at this point, if you have some grow lights or something on it, I would to leave it in the basement or to gradually acclimate it to outdoor. I think at this point in the year, it would be better to leave it in the basement and then plant
know.
It out
it
in the
get
spring.
Super cold, and like what happened to me with my hellebores.
Yeah.
You know, if you got lucky,
right.
It might catch on, but
right.
If it gets super
now, if it's
cold.
Not under grow lights and it's in a dormant state and the pot is just sitting in the basement kind of overwintering, definitely leave it there. And don't water it, but maybe once every 6 or 8 weeks. And then in the spring, plant it out into the garden somewhere. Or you can always continue to grow it in a nice, put it in a larger pot, and then just move the pot into a cold basement or cold cellar for the winter and then move it back out in the spring. You can grow roses in containers very nicely by doing that. They do need to have those roots insulated or moved into a sheltered but cold area for the winter.
Do you have many roses? I don't remember.
I think I have two right now. I lost one last year. Even the hardy shrub roses that don't require spraying or anything like that, I would much rather grow like an easy, low maintenance perennial than something with thorns that I have to. They're not really fussy. They don't require a lot of energy, but I just would rather devote that space to something else.
For some reason, I've been able to keep a couple roses going in spots they really shouldn't like, you know, too much shade. You know, that Gertrude Jekyll is a David Austin rose I just love, but how it survives in this, on the edge of the vegetable garden, I have no idea, but it survives. It blooms a couple times a year. I've got a big Zephyrine Drohin climber that I lose about once every 10 years. Mm. It's like zone 6.
Okay.
So in a tough year, it'll either go all the way back down to the ground, or I'll just completely, I think I've lost it once or twice, and I just put another one in, and then it grows up to the top. Now it's like 18 foot tall.
Wow.
I don't have to do anything with it. That one's thornless.
Those are the kind of roses I like, the ones you don't have to do anything with.
It just does its thing. But I've never been able to get something on the other side of the trellis to catch.
Yeah.
You know, I guess I should put another Zephyrine Drohin.
Well, there you go. That's your sign, right? That must be your quote-unquote rose.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Some things you can grow, some things you can't. And I wish I could get rid of the bamboo that is in my garden. It's just awful.
Mm,
it's just awful. Worst thing I ever did was putting that in. And it's funny, I did a little story on this documentary, this guy, Ryan Gainey. He was a garden designer in Atlanta, and I was watching the documentary, and they were asking him about the bamboo, because it's the same one that I've got, this little short one that's variegated. And he said, you know, I'm never going to get rid of it, and it's beautiful, so I just got to live with it. And I'm just like, yeah, don't I know it?
Yeah, the only thing is, if you could keep it from somehow getting under the fence and into the vegetable garden, that would make it a lot easier. Like if you could get a metal stripping or bury an aluminum strip under the ground to keep it from coming over. But you'd have to get rid of everything that's already in the vegetable garden, which would be quite a challenge. Yeah. And that's the risk always when planting something that, but in this case, you didn't know it was invasive, did you? When you planted it?
No, it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't run. It'll just sit there.
It's supposed to be a quote-unquote clump former.
I saw that guy about a year ago, too.
Did you? Yeah. Did you give him what for?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There's just some plants like that gout weed or bishop's weed that is just, it's still on the market. It's sold as a fast-growing ground cover, but what it should be taken off the market.
Chameleon plant.
Houtonia or chameleon plant, Korean ivy, they also call it.
I mean, it looks beautiful, but you don't realize that once it gets established, there's no getting rid of it. It's going to go everywhere, and it's going to ruin your garden.
Exactly. And there are just some plants that, in my opinion, they should be taken off the market, shouldn't be sold, or they should come with an incredible warning of, you know, warning this. And we're not talking about invasive, like a little bit. I mean, these guys run rampant, and they spread like those bamboos do.
Yeah, you always think, well, I've got, you know, I need to cover this spot, and I need something that runs. That's fine until it overruns.
Right, exactly. You know, coming up in the lawn.
Right. It's just like, oh.
Yeah.
You know, a trumpet vine. You hear poor people with trumpet vine. You know, those things come up everywhere. You can't get rid of them. You'll never, how are you going to get rid of it?
Right.
Except excavate the entire area.
Yeah. And that even wisteria, which is lovely and beautiful blooms when they decide to bloom, which is not until they're at least 5 years old. And even then, a lot of years, you won't get blooms out of them.
I once did a guy needed a favor. I came to look at his wisteria. I said, well, the only way you're going to do it, you know, give him the root pruning, blah, blah, blah. And I saw him. This was years ago. I saw him about 2 months ago. I said, how did those? He goes, I took them all out.
Yeah. I'm surprised he could get them out. That's the problem.
I think he did it the same way that I just said.
Yeah. Excavator.
Right. Backhoe.
Yeah. And that's the trouble. You know, anytime you introduce a new plant into your garden, it's really important that you do a little bit of research. If it says fast spreading, man, it might be something you might not want to plant.
Remember, the organic gardeners always aim to create a better place to garden
and a safer place to live.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.